Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Welcome back. Sports Radio 94 WIP. Joe Giglio with you. Tucker Bagley's behind the glass. You guys with us. 215-592-9494. We'll get back to all the talk about Doug Peterson and your favorite wrestler of all time on this 316 night. But we have to go to the phone lines here, to the guest line, to bring on a guy you know very well. You hear him on the weekends with the Go Birds show with Elliot Shore Parks. And, of course, every day, Monday to Friday, producing the midday show with DeCameron Ritchie. He is one half of the High Hopes podcast. He's with us now for tonight's Clearwater check-in. It is James Seltzer. James, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, Joe. That's quite an introduction. I don't know if I'll live up to it, but I appreciate it.
Well, you do a lot of things. So I want to make sure the people know what you do. And here you're with us tonight talking to Philly. So, James, we're about a little over two weeks to go until opening day. And there's a lot of different elements we'll get to. But I have to start with the one question that I think has been the most interesting of spring training, which is center field. I know you guys had Mickey Moniak on last week on the High Hopes podcast. Where do you stand right now? Because I thought today when the Phillies sent down Chatham and Maton to minor league camp, I thought it was a sign that Kingery's going to be the utility infielder. He's kind of the reserve infielder, which means this might be down to Moniak and Herrera. What's your center field thought right now?
Yeah, it's starting to look like that. I think they might have wanted Scott to play there to start at spring training, but he's just been so lost that it's hard to see putting him in the lineup every day. And look, he does add a lot of value as someone who can play, more or less every position on the field. So I understand that. It's frustrating because I'm rooting for Mickey Moniak. We had him on the podcast. He's an awesome, awesome guy, like a great talker at the age of 22. And I do think there's still potential there because, again, he is only 22. But, I'm nervous because Herrera is probably the better option right now if we're talking about just winning games to start the season right away. But, I don't want to have to root for Odubel Herrera, just flat out. So it's a frustrating situation. I'm certainly rooting for Mickey Moniak to get it, and I think there's a lot more upside with that too. So.
Yeah, I think a lot of fans probably feel that same way. And that's the way I feel in terms of the best option right now if they're trying to win opening day. It is Herrera, but it's uncomfortable. I'd rather it be Mickey. I'd rather it not be Herrera. And the Phillies have put themselves in the spot where it's not going to be an easy choice. I think if they had it their way, James, Hazley would have stayed healthy or Kingery would have just taken this thing. It's almost like this is the worst case scenario where they either have to choose between a guy who might not really be ready versus a guy that most fans don't want here.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And that's why I think they wanted Kingery to win the job or at worst Hazley. And it was, like you said, a worst case scenario. I mean, the Hazley injury is obviously just bad luck. But, again, Kingery's just been so bad. I don't know how you could justify putting him out there. And like you said, they put themselves in this position. Just don't have Odubel there. Like, it's very simple. If you don't want him to win the job, don't have him there. And I think by having him there, you've almost, hamstrung yourself to where you have to give him a real chance to win it. And, it looks like right now he's got a real chance to win it.
He does. James Seltzer with us here talking to Phillies Clearwater check-in. All right, so we know the bullpen's going to be quite different. It should be a million times better because it can't be any worse than last year. When you think about the names they have down there, James, how do you think they should do it late in games? Girardi has a name to closer. He's kind of spoken that, if possible, he would rather have roles than not. We know some managers are like it more than others. Other managers, they'll just do whatever each night and kind of put the best matchup out there. But when you look at this thing, do you still think Hector's the closer? Is it definitely Bradley because he's here now? How do you view the back of the bullpen now with all these new guys?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I do think Girardi ultimately does want to have roles. But I think it's also one of those things that could play itself out, which you see a lot of times where ultimately in a meritocracy in that sense, certain guys will rise to the top and get a chance if other guys struggles in the role and so on and so forth. So I think right now, I think Bradley is probably the front runner just because he is the biggest name there. He's closed the most games comparatively. And I think that he's come in. And look, he'll pitch anywhere. He said that. But I think he's probably the front runner. But I think if it's not him, I think Hector also makes a lot of sense as someone who Joe has, you know, coached for a year, managed for a year, and knows what he can do. Ultimately, you know, assuming he stays healthy and can, you know, keep the control there, I think anyone who's watched any spring training and has watched him pitch before he came here, I think Jose Alvarado is the most talented guy there. You know, it's a question of, and he has closed games as well, at least for a brief period in Tampa. So I think ultimately there's a chance that down the road he's the guy, but I think right now it'll be Bradley or Harrison, and I would lean towards Bradley.
Yeah, I would too. And Alvarado's looked incredible. But that might be the steal of Dombrowski's offseason. So the bullpen will hopefully be no longer a liability, even if it's middle of the pack. That's going to be much better than last year. The starting rotation, James, the more I watch it and the more I think about it, it might be pretty good. You know, we know how good Nola is, and Wheeler last year was very good in his first year as a Philly. Eflin, who you and I talked about when we saw each other yesterday before Burr's Town Hall, I mean, he looks poised to break out. And I will take Moore and Anderson. What's your thoughts on how good this rotation be? Because I saw an article, MLB.com had it like a month ago when spring training started, and they had the top 10 rotations in baseball, and they listed 9, and then they kind of hedged to 10, and they had like 7 or 8 options. You know, one of these could end up being the 10th, and they had the Phillies in there based on the strength of Nola and Wheeler. And I looked, and I was like, this is ridiculous. The Phillies won't have a top 10 rotation. But the more I watch them in spring training, and I think about Moore bouncing back and Anderson, it's not crazy that this rotation could be good.
Yeah, I actually – so, and it's funny you brought that up. Fangraphs actually did something similar with the top 10 rotations. They had the Phillies as the 7th best rotation in baseball. Yeah, and you see it, and it just kind of shocks you at first. But something else I said to you when we were talking the other day is, you know, we get so myopic with this, with the Phillies, because this is a team we watch every night, and we're so used to seeing, you know, horrible 4th and 5th starters like Vincent Velasquez and whatnot. But – you know, you look at Chase Anderson and Matt Moore, and I'm more confident in Anderson being at least steady. You know, Moore hasn't been good in a while, let's be honest. I mean, really since 2016 has he been a viable major league pitcher. I was in Japan last year. But Chase Anderson's like nothing special, but he's like a, you know, 6 innings, 3 runs, 6 innings, 4 runs, 6 innings, 2 runs, you know, that kind of guy. And at least compared to what we've had here, I think that's a step up. And ultimately, when you look at all the other teams in baseball, there are a lot of Chase Andersons and Matt Moores at the back of rotations. You know, we get so hung up on our 4 and 5 starter and how bad they are, but they're bad all across baseball for the most part, obviously with some exceptions. So I'm with you. I think if those guys can just give you some innings and some quality innings compared to, you know, Vincent Velasquez type innings, I think that could be an upgrade. And I feel good about the top three. I mean, you know, Nola's not, you know, he needs to win late in the season to really kind of certify himself as a true ace. But, I mean, he's a 1A. He's a really good pitcher. And Wheeler's not far behind. And like you said, I think we're both in on Eflin being a lot better than I think people think. He was missing bats last year, Joe. Like, he had, like, almost 11 strikeouts per 9, 28% strikeout rate. Like, he was good. So I'm not as pessimistic about the rotation as others are.
So, James, what's your biggest worry? Right, we're talking ourselves into the rotation. We know the bullpen will be better. It's just a matter of how good they're going to be. And center field, it's a weakness, but you know they have other hitters that they're going to score some runs. What's your biggest concern for this team? I'll throw mine at you. It's defense. And I know it's not something we talk about much in baseball. It's not like, you know, other sports where it matters. All, you know, it's all we talk about sometimes. But I look at this team, and other than Real Muto, I don't think they have a plus defender anywhere. I mean, they might be able to get by in some places, but a lot of their pitchers, right, the top three guys we were mentioning, Nola, Wheeler, Eflin, they're all ground ball guys. And I'm looking around the infield at Hoskins, at Segura, at Didi, at Bohm, and I'm just – like, I just wonder if that's going to be the Achilles heel. What's your biggest worry? Because I just wonder how bad or what this defense will look like.
Joe, it's actually a really great point that I think has kind of gone under the radar. I read a really good piece by Joe Sheehan about it, basically making the case the Phillies' defense has been historically bad over the last 3 years, particularly even last year, which And I think, like, it's one of those things where, and this is a stats-based argument, and I think defensive stats are not necessarily as, you know, perfect and as put together as offensive stats in baseball. But, you know, I think when you watch the team every night, you don't look at them and say, oh, wow, they're one of the worst defensive teams I've ever seen. But they really, when you look at it, like, they don't get to a lot of balls. They have below average defenders at a lot of positions. I think you can maybe argue Bryce has been above average as well, other than JT. But, I mean, really, really deficient. And at certain spots, I mean, they have multiple DHs out there on the field. I mean, Reese Hoskins is a DH. Boehm, you know, unless he really improves, feels like a DH-type player. So I think that's actually a really good point. I think that's actually the weakest part of their team. I can't help but still be concerned about the bullpen until I see the bullpen be better. So I guess it's kind of an irrational thing with me, but it's just coming off that season last year where it just, you couldn't enjoy a baseball game because every game, no matter what the lead is, you had this fear and a righteous fear that they were going to come back to blow it. And it just, it really scarred me watching these games. And so for me, even though I agree with you, I think the defense really should be the biggest fear that people don't talk about and is the biggest weakness with the team. I just can't help but be afraid about the bullpen until I see these new pieces succeed, until I see the old pieces be better. So I'll say the bullpen, but I think you're probably right with defense.
Yeah, it's almost like a post-traumatic bullpen syndrome. We're all going to have it. Like, until we get a couple clean games.
Yeah,
it was rough. Our last one for you, James. James Seltzer joining us here talking to Phillies Clearwater check-in. I'm gonna throw a hypothetical at you, and you just give me the answer, whatever comes off the top of your head. Ready?
Yep.
Bottom of the ninth, tie game, or down one, runner on second base, two outs, against the Braves or the Mets. Big game late September. Who do you want at the plate, Bryce or Boehm?
I didn't even need you to finish the question. As soon as you started the question, Alec Boehm was in my head. Like, it's not – I know that sounds crazy, but he's just a natural, this kid. And if we're just talking about getting a hit, like, if you're saying – all right, I have to get a home run in this spot. Obviously, you would take Bryce. He's more likely to home run right now. But in terms of, I just need a hit. I need someone to come through in this spot. I need someone to work this at bat. I think it's Boehm. Like, this kid is super impressive. He is a natural hitter. You know, we've talked about it a ton, but, you know, you hear him talked about, like, as a guy who adjusts not at bat to bat, but pitch to pitch. And he is just I think he's just such a natural, talented hitter that his floor is so incredibly high, and his ceiling obviously is high as well. And, you know, what we've seen so far, what he looks like in spring already, like, I just don't see a dip coming. So it's crazy. It feels weird to say that after, you know, a guy like Bryce, who is, you know, a stud in this league for a long time, but I would want Alec Boehm at the plate.
Which it's incredible, considering how little he's played. But the faith that we have in him, it's real. You mentioned his floor. Here's the guy I think his floor is, James. And this is saying a lot because he's been a really good hitter for about a half a decade now. I think his floor is like a Justin Turner type of player.
I mean, that would be an amazing floor. Like, an amazing floor.
That'd be great. I mean, Turner's been a star for the Dodgers for years. James, this was fun. We're going to do the Phillies roundtable before the start of the season, so we'll have you and Jack on then for High Hopes Hour. Thank you for hopping on tonight.
I can't wait, buddy. Thanks for having me.
There he goes. James Seltzer, High Hopes Podcast, and, of course, WIP Midday Show. Talking some Alec Boehm. Tucker, Alec Boehm, Bryce Harper. Bottom of the ninth, down one, runner on second, two outs. Who do you want to play?
I mean, I'll take the guy who hit 320 as a rookie.
Like, I don't disagree with – I feel the same thing, but doesn't it – it's amazing. He's only played what? How many games did he play? 40?
And he played 44 maybe? Something like that?
Yeah, I mean, he's barely a major leaguer at this point. And yet with the faith that we have in him – I mean, he got a lot of big hits. He puts the bat on the ball, which obviously Bryce Harper's a strikeout guy, right? That's he strikes out, hits home runs, and walks. It's just – it's if I said that to you last year, you would have said, we don't even know if he's any good or not. Like, he just got here, but – people believe in him already.
And Bryce obviously has a knack for the dramatic.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he had obviously that grand slam against Chicago. He had a walk-off hit against the Dodgers a week earlier. But, I mean, if we want to be realistic about it, Bryce Harper comes up with two outs and a man on second base. He's getting walked.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they're not pitching to him.
It's almost,
and he's patient enough that he's not going to swing outside of the zone.
Right. It's almost – it's similar to, like, back in the day, would you have rather had – Howard up there or Jason Worth up there? Right? It's like different kinds of hitters. Both could do damage, but I would have trusted Worth in those spots. And I think there's a lot of Jason Worth to to the game of Alec Bohm. 215-592-9494. That is how you hop aboard. Let's go back to the phone lines here. Steve is in Wildwood. What's up, Steve?
Joe, how you doing?
Good, Steve. How are you?
Hey, doing great, man. Hey, great update, great Phillies talk. And I love to talk Phillies. I could talk Phillies all the time. But I wanted to chime in on your debate here if the Eagles are going to regret Doug Goodwin.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask you a question, Joe. In the last 30 years, since Jimmy Johnson repeated with the Dallas Cowboys in 93, 94, how many coaches have repeated or won multiple Super Bowls since then?
Repeated would only be Belichick, I believe. Well, no, Belichick and the
Belichick
Broncos.
Brady, yep.
And the Broncos, right? Shanahan won back-to-back 97, 98.
Yeah.
That's
or
it.
Or won multiple Super Bowls.
So if we add multiple in there, we'd have Tom Coughlin. Is anyone? I don't think anyone else has
that's
won
multiple.
That's it, yeah.
That's it. So in light of those facts, in the last 30 years, it's not easy. And we know Belichick cheated with Brady, and you know, Brady also helped him. So it's just, you know, the Eagles are thinking, I mean, this is me thinking for them, you know, and it's kind of a theory that I'm throwing at you. It's so hard to do. I mean, you've had guys like Sean Payton, he can't do it. Mike Tomlin, he can't do it. John Harbaugh, he can't do it. Brian Billick, he couldn't do it. You've had a lot of great coaches, and they're still trying some of these guys. It's not that easy to do. So maybe the Eagles just said, let's rip the Band-Aid and move on.
You know, it's a fair point, Steve. In a sense, they're betting against Doug's next 5 years, not so much not appreciating his first five.
Agreed. Yeah, I think that's more like it. And when you look at it like that, and you look at it through that spectrum or that perspective, I don't think they're going to regret it. You know, and I like Doug. Don't give me wrong. I think he did a great job. I mean, remember, you know, hey, you want to do Philly? Sure. You know, I mean, how he handled that was awesome. You know, it was Foles walking. Do you want to do Philly? Sure. I mean, you can't beat that. And he's got a statue for it.
Oh, it's great. But, yeah, he had the perfect temperament for that time. Perfect temperament.
Yeah. But it's time to move on. I don't think they're going to regret it. And I got a wrestler for you, Joe. Okay. You ready?
I'm ready.
Because when this wrestler, I got one question for you, Joe.
Okay.
What you going to do when Hulkamania and the 24-inch pythons run wild on you, brother?
I feel like I got to take my Hulkamania vitamins now.
You got to rip your T-shirt off.
That's
Joe.
Right. That's right. I do.
You got the eye of the tiger in the background. Joe, when I was a kid, that's when I started. I was started in 1978. Bob Backlund was a champion. I used to have Prism Wrestling, right? And then it was Rocky III, and it was Hulk Hogan. And, man, that took it to the whole next level. Everybody knows it was Hogan and the WWF that took it to the next level.
Well, and then WrestleMania started, and it took off from there.
It was just, you know, he was like a god. I mean, it was unbelievable what he did for wrestling. And you know, for that, he's my favorite of all.
You know, it's a great one, Steve, and he had such a great run. And really, I mean, it would not be, Steve, appreciate the call. Wrestling wouldn't be anywhere what it became without Hulk Hogan. Like, he took the torch from all those guys that we heard some of their names tonight, like old-time wrestlers from different, you know, places and the old independent places. But, like, I would say 80s, it jumped to a different level, like WrestleMania, Vince McMahon. Like, it went to a totally different level. And none of that happens without Hulk Hogan. Like, he started all of it.
I mean, he was the star.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he was mainstream wrestling.
And then from there, like, there was a bunch of great characters that formed off of that, right? The Stone Colds, the Rocks. I mean, but none of that happens without Hulk Hogan. Like, he started it, and then it went from there, and it blew up. I barely remember, because I was young then. I barely remember when wrestling wasn't a big deal. It felt like when I was becoming, I don't know, 9, 10, 11, and I started watching it, like, it started to pop. Everyone was talking about it. There was one point when I would go into school, 6th, 7th grade, I felt like I couldn't go on the bus the morning after Raw unless I watched it. Like, I would have been left out of the conversation. It's almost like now, it's the same way I feel. Like, imagine if I couldn't watch the Eagles game on Sunday. What would I talk about? What, like, I can't not watch the Eagles game.
We should try that.
Come in one Monday? I skipped it this week. What happened?
Yeah, I mean, that would be the whole show. Where people explain to you how the Eagles game went, and then you can guess what actually happened.
So you're saying don't watch it, don't read anything, don't.
You
don't watch,
like, you literally come in at 6 o'clock.
Dark, in the dark.
In the dark, and we have callers call and explain to you what happened.
That actually would be interesting. And then I go back and watch it myself after the show to see how much different people see the game versus me. Because that's basically what we do, right? We give our opinions, and we realize that people see the same game differently, right? That was the whole Carson Wentz conversation for a couple years.
Right.
Same game. We see it differently. Yeah, I would imagine that I'd go home and I would see the game differently than I was told it happened. With quarterback play, with coaching, with refereeing. My guess would be that what I'd be told for 4 hours, I'd come in the next day and be like, I don't know. I saw it differently.
You guys sure that happened?
We watching the same game? All right, 215-592-9494. That is how you hop aboard. There was actually one rumor today with the Eagles. You see it? There was one name they were interested in, and it's not a quarterback. It was a cornerback. Kawan Williams, the slot corner from the Niners.
Kawan Williams, yes.
Kawan Williams. So here's the thing. He's a good player. He has been, from what I saw, one of the higher-ranked pro football focus slot corners the last few years. I mean, he's a pretty good player. The one thing I wonder is he's 29 years old. I'm not sure if he's just turned 29 or he'll be 30 next season, but he's not young, right? When we're thinking about guys the Eagles could have some interest in, I'm thinking more 26, 27 years old in that range, 25 if they're that young and available. 29 feels like, I don't know. Unless they think he's going to age really well, a 29-year-old corner. They already traded for Slay last year, and now he, I thought, had a year where he was just okay and not great, and he's about to enter his 30s. I'm out on the idea of a 29-year-old corner.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty much worked exclusively out of the slot for his entire career. He started in Cleveland before going to San Francisco. He had injury problems last year. He only played 8 games, but his production the last 2 years, I mean, he only played 8 games this year and still put up 2 sacks blitzing out of the slot. His quarterback rating the last 2 years when targeted was 76 and 81. I mean, he's been pretty productive for a guy that was on a defense that didn't really have much other talent. I mean, Richard Sherman, I think, played 3 games this year for the 49ers.
He was banged up.
I mean, they were a banged up secondary, and he was probably the best one out there.
And look, can he play? Can he help? I'm sure. I just wonder about his age and trajectory, but if that's, I imagine the Eagles are going to carve out enough cap room by 4 o'clock tomorrow that they're going to sign someone, that they're going to get a player, whether it be a secondary player or a wide receiver. They're going to go out and get a player. We will find out what kind of player that is. But other than backup quarterback, the most buzz day one was John Johnson, the safety who went to the Browns. And today it's Kawan Williams. We'll see if that manifests itself in anything when we get to tomorrow. 215-592-9494. That is how you hop in. When we get back, Doug Peterson spoke to John Clark today. We'll bring a couple elements we didn't talk about earlier in the show. One, what is his relationship with Carson Wentz? Was it as bad as reported? And what does Doug think about Jalen Hurts, who now stands atop the Eagles' depth chart quarterback? You'll hear that come up on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.